Happy hour! Welcome to it. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood presents the Glass in the Afternoon radio program. Happy hour! Here on the 20th day of the fourth month, happy Thursday. It is hot, hot, hot outside. We are trapped inside for 49 minutes and 47 more seconds, and then we will be out joining it. I've already cut the grass today. I've already walked Kirkwood and grabbed some lunch, so I was wondering why I was tired earlier. I was whacking weeds and then mowing and doing all that stuff. Luckily, Osterman is here to keep me company. Hey, good to see you. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Are you getting a little bit healthier? Sound a little bit better? Big week for you. Yeah. Bike races are going on. You just came from outside. How perfect is it?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I was building some flower beds.
That a boy.
At home this afternoon.
Above ground?
Above ground.
To keep the
raised beds.
So then you got to what? Put dirt and topsoil in them and do all that fun stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So I got them mostly built, and then you get them down, you put some landscaping fabric in the bottom. And then you just fill them with, like, soil and compost.
You growing vegetables or flowers or both?
That's up to my wife. But I think vegetables,
yes,
mostly vegetables.
Well, that's good. You put a little fencing around there as well to keep the deer and the rabbits and all the other fun stuff out of there. And then it grows a little bit better as well. The clay soil that most of us have here is not much fun. So 83 downtown. It's absolutely perfect. It is perfect today. Sadly, for the racing of bicycles coming up tomorrow and Saturday, that is not the perfect forecast. We'll be lucky to hit 60 tomorrow for the 35th edition of the women's race starting at 4 o'clock. We'll be lucky to be in the 50s on Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for the men's race. The women's race tomorrow will come with rain. Perhaps the men's race will come with a stronger breeze, but it is the world's greatest college weekend. The 72nd running of 72nd, that's a long time, of the Little 500, 2 o'clock on Saturday. One ticket gets you in for both. If you're into that, if you've not seen the pomp and circumstance, it's very cool. The pictures I put up earlier in the week and today, you can see Bill Armstrong Stadium all decked out. The empty corners are no longer empty. There are bleachers surrounding the entire track, the quarter-mile cinder oval, and it will crown, after 200 laps on Saturday, the 72nd men's champion, and after 100 laps on Friday, the 35th women's champion. And Osterman is here to tell us all about it. We will talk racing of bicycles a little bit later in the program, because I know most of you are tuning in at 5:05 to hear all of the wonderful things we can talk about. Basketball, IU, and anything going on with football. So we'll do a little bikes in the second half of the program. But before we get to that, we've got all kinds of things going on in the transfer portal. We see schedules and games being squirted out here, there, and otherwhere. People in, people out. We know May 11th is the wonderful deadline. And since I've seen you last, the last question I asked you last Thursday was, when we come back next week, will Indiana had any movement? You said yes, and sadly, the answer has been no.
Well, they did have movement.
Just not favorable.
Not what they wanted. They were strongly in on Chris Ledlam, the Harvard transfer I think we talked about a couple times.
Yes.
6'6 wing forward.
He is going to Tennessee, he announced last night.
Over Indiana and St. John's, which is as much as New York City can be, his hometown team. He was from
Long Island?
I think he's from the Bronx.
Okay.
I may be wrong about that. But near,
right.
And not just, you know, he's not just from New York. Like, St.
City.
John's would be local to him, where he grew up. Anyway, the point is, that's never mind for Indiana. He was a priority, pretty clearly. He'd been on campus. He visited the same weekend as Khalil Ware, the confirmed transfer from Oregon, and I think, you know,
that's the interesting part.
I don't know where Indiana felt they were, but it certainly seemed, you know, it's funny because a lot of these kids aren't doing a lot of interviews, you know, these transfer kids, and I think there's maybe an extent to which the glamour of recruiting is not quite there in the same way the second time, and probably also just an extent to which it's sort of like, let's just do it quickly, we have less time, I know what I want. It's you know, this isn't about me thinking about, oh, I'm going to get better as a basketball player. I'm going to be the next 4 years, this, that. It's just like, hey, I got 1 year left, 2 years left. These are my ambitions. Who can take me there? I think it's much more sort of mature in a way and much more sped up in another way. And so I think you're getting, you know, kind of the, you're getting a little bit less of the sort of fanfare around it, and that means a little bit more of maybe people filling in gaps And I think there was a perception that Indiana was in a good spot with Ledlam. I certainly got that feel. But that was very much, I think, people kind of trying to read tea leaves. And ultimately, of course, that did not work out the way they had hoped.
And not everybody that comes on campus is going to sign up.
No. And listen, Indiana's already landed two pretty good transfers. And so it's easy to feel like you're going to win every game when you get Khalil Ware from Oregon. It's easy to feel like things have never been worse and the whole plan has fallen apart when Chris Ledlam goes to Tennessee. It's always somewhere in the middle. Best laid plans rarely finish the way they start. Indiana, I think it's pretty clear, wanted Chris Ledlam. They saw a real role for him. They saw that they liked a lot of what they saw from him. Ultimately, he chose to go somewhere else, and now they have to figure out something else.
And all of that can happen, and the transfer portal churns and churns and churns and churns. We talked last week about Joey Baker and not getting his waiver at Michigan. Here we are a week later, no word on Xavier Johnson, so we'll leave that where it is. No new information there, and that's just that's what it'll be. Where does Indiana go next in the portal? Because, we're going to wake up next weekend, and we're in the final weekend of April. Then we're going to go, then it's going to be – then boom. The portal date of May 11th is important for what? Entering the portal? You can leave the portal at different times, but you have to be in the portal by the May 11th?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, and I think the cutoff or what you want to say is like if you want to go through the process in this window, I think you need to be in the portal by then. So if you have intention of moving, you need to be, moved along. And the other thing that happens,
you have to be landed though.
Well, I don't think so.
See, that's the interesting part. So on May 11th,
I have to double check that.
On May 11th, it's going to be the Fisher cut bait to get into the portal, and then the portal door closes.
I believe that's correct.
Okay, and then you can stop the ride when you'd like at any time after that to get off the portal. You just can't let any new portalers on.
I believe that is correct.
Because the NCAA would make it so simple and make us grind out all of these things. So we've got, 3 weeks? Is that basically what we're at?
Yeah.
11 days of May and the remaining 10 days of April.
I mean, it's worth reminding people.
That's why you're here.
Not everybody who's in the portal now is the extent of everybody who's going to be in the portal.
Sure, that's right.
We didn't think Hunter Dickinson was going in the portal.
Ta-da!
And then there he was.
We didn't think the kid at Michigan who, the big fella, the other one, he wants out of his deal. Did you see that the other day?
No. Who? Cheddar?
No. Musa something, perhaps?
I know. Well, I think he's a recruit, isn't he?
Right, but he still wants out.
Well,
so
yeah.
That's in the churn.
Yeah,
sure.
and I say that to say this, and this isn't to preface anything. I'm not trying to sort of foretell something that I know is going to happen.
Oh, come on, try.
But, people closer to the pulse or whatever, people within the sport will know somebody, will at least have an inkling somebody unexpected is headed for the portal before it's public, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can, if you're Indiana, you might even have a list of guys that you think, he may not, but if he does, we're going to be ready. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You're going to have a list of guys where you say, we know he is, words out he is, when he goes in the portal, we're going to want to be involved. Then you're going to have a list of guys that say, based on what we've heard, he may not, we'll keep him over here because we're going to want to be involved if he chooses to go in.
Got
to
be on your toes, right? And Indiana has room for everyone because of these. They're not filled, right? The scholarships, they're open. They're available.
Correct.
Available people to have.
Three of them.
The big news in the conference this week is what? Malik Hall and Tyson Walker are coming back from Michigan State. That's going to make Tom Izzo's next season a little bit easier to deal with. Zach Edey has declared, but he's going to maintain his eligibility. Why wouldn't you if you're Edey? I mean,
if anything, I was kind of surprised it took that long, but it really doesn't matter that much because Edey, like most guys that aren't, top 15 to 20, pretty likely is going to just need the combine. Edey is in, they're different prospects, and Jackson Davis's pro stock is probably stronger right now. But Edey and Trace Jackson Davis are both players that ultimately, it really doesn't matter too much when they declare, so much as just that they get into the combine, because the combine is where you're going to prove certain things. Now, I will say, you know, I've talked to some NBA people, and they wonder, like, with Trace in the combine, if he wouldn't look at it and just be like, listen, you had 4 years of tape on me. You know, like, I've done what I've done. I'm not going to step in and make 5 out of 5 threes in the combine and suddenly, like.
Or if I go 0 for 5, it doesn't make me any worse.
Yeah, like, it's it. But I still think that guys like that just tend to need to play. Obviously test, but also play and then certainly interview. And I think that, you know, they have different things to prove. Trace, I think the big piece for him is there more versatility? Is there more ceiling to his offensive game than what he's already shown? Particularly, can he develop a jump shot so that he can be a little bit more, he doesn't have to be inside where he's not the biggest guy in the room, the strongest guy in the room the way he is in, sometimes in college. With Edie, I think the vast majority of it is going to be defensive.
It's
just going to be like, can you prove that you are capable defending in space? Can you prove that you are a good rim protector and not like the, and I'm not, listen, there was a lot of stuff thrown at Zach Edey this year that was very like, oh, he's just good because he's tall. It's like, no, like that, the offensive game he had, the touch he had around the rim, the timing, the footwork, that's not just because he's tall. I do think some of the block numbers and a little bit of the rebounding was because he was just tall. And you've got to go prove to the NBA where everybody's quicker and more athletic and longer, and you don't have that. Being 7'4 is not quite the game changer it was before.
No.
Can you be a rim protector and not just a tall guy with long arms?
Defensive it's 3 seconds.
It's all going
to
be.
Well, that's defense. A huge thing. You just can't sit in there and clog things up in the NBA. You have to be able to move in and out through the lane. You have to be able to guard people at 25 feet.
You have to cover
feet.
Ball screens. Right. You have to, yeah.
Drop coverage is great at some levels, but not at that level, because everybody at that level can hit a jumper. So Edie will be what? Well, he's not going to make or break Purdue, but if he comes back, which I think he's probably going to come back because he'll get plenty of money from NIL to do so, then Purdue is just reloaded again for next year. Another player that Indiana was looking at was from Towson, was Nick Timberlake, Justin's cousin. And, well, he's heading to Kansas. And the other big name on the list, you just mentioned his name a minute ago, Hunter Dickinson. But Hunter Dickinson also has Michigan on his list. What are we doing? Highest bidder, right?
Probably to some extent. I mean, and
well, here's
and
maybe what I just got from Kansas. What do you got for me over here?
Well, but you know, also opportunities. You know, what kind of role can you send him? I mean, look at Nick Timberlake, who was a player that I think was linked to Indiana stronger early than he wound up being kind of late. You know, he can look at Kansas and say, well, there's a strong history there of scoring two guards. And look at all the shots that are going out the door. You know, Grady Dick is declared. I think Jalen Wilson has, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So, hey, look at all, you know, here are two versatile wings that got a bunch of inside offense, a bunch of outside offense.
And nobody left in Kansas can shoot.
Yeah. And so.
That's true.
There's, you know, there's a lot of shots for me there. There's a lot of opportunity for me there. And there's a coach there that's got a proven track record of taking a player who looks at least somewhat like me and making him into an all Big 12 caliber player.
Do we talk about Caleb Love to Michigan, or was that too new last week, or were we too busy?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
All right. Well, Caleb Love is going to Michigan, and Ace Baldwin is going to follow his coach from VCU to Penn State. So that's interesting. Again, the enemy of what is that, the old line? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So we're always watching what others are doing here. So the Big Ten, again, is it's going to be a down year. Oh, we say it every year. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then all of a sudden, you just kind of look between the bushes there, and everybody's reloading. Everybody's picking up guys. People want to play in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I think the fascinating question, and I mean, this is as true of Indiana as it is anybody else, is how do you handle the dynamic when the reloading isn't the old way of reloading, but it's some guys left, some transfers came in. You're going to have to rebuild the airplane a lot faster. But on the other hand, the guys you're rebuilding it with are more proven. They're more experienced. They know a few more tricks of the trade. You don't have to spend as much time teaching them basketball. You can spend a little bit more time just teaching them what you're trying to do, if that makes any sense.
It does.
And so, you know, that's kind of the new challenge. And listen, I mean, you know, Indiana didn't take any transfers last year. Purdue didn't take any transfers a couple years ago. You know, Marquette didn't take any transfers last year. They won the Big East double. You don't need to do it. You can persist with what you have, but there are going to be times where you, just by circumstance as much as anything else, wind up in a spot like where Indiana wound up, which is a bunch of guys out the door because of graduation or the draft, a couple more that ultimately decide to enter the portal. And so suddenly you got 6-7 holes to fill. You're not going to do that just with freshmen. You're going to go looking for guys that can make an impact right away and have more experience.
A.J. Storr, 6'6 wing, left St. John's. He will head to Wisconsin. But Caleb Love's interesting because we always have this argument come March at the Big Ten's foibles in the NCAA tournament. Now you got a guy that's won a national championship, played in the ACC, and is going to go
win a national championship.
Or played a national championship. Lost a title game.
Yeah. Sorry.
You're right.
Sorry to be Mr. King Peden there.
Well, those are facts. They get in the way of a lot of good arguments. But now you have him leaving the holy land of basketball to come to the brutish, knockdown, take a charge, Big Ten. That has to be an advertisement for the league in some way.
Possibly. I mean, again, I think it's the old thing about the, you know, the...
Or is it straight money? Let's just cut to the
chase. It's also just the old thing about the Zen master and the little boy. Like, you know, we'll see. Like, everything is... Nothing is either good or bad until you have the benefit of context. Like, if Caleb Love comes in here, if Kalel Ware comes in here...
Well, Caleb Love's from St. Louis. He's not moving. If he comes into the Big Ten
and... You know, he looks a lot more like Caleb Love the back half of two seasons ago and not like the guy who just kind of turned into a chucker last year and couldn't make anything. And I think he was maybe playing a little hurt at times. You know, then, yeah, it's a good advertisement for the Big Ten, same as Jalen Hunchafino was this year. In the same way that if Kalel Ware comes into Indiana and, you know, he goes from being long-armed, decent feet, couldn't quite find a role at Oregon to being – that's a top 10 prospect. He's 7 feet tall. He shoots threes. He catches every lob that's thrown to him. You can't stop him. He's going to be a lottery pick now. This was all our evaluations were correct. That's a good advertisement for the Big Ten, too. And it's not the old advertisement of come to the Big Ten, play with your back to the basket, 61 possessions a game. It's a new advertisement of, hey, 2 years in a row, a really well-regarded recruit came to Indiana, got a lot better, went on to the NBA draft. And that's good for Indiana, but it's also good for the conference. But we just don't know until we see it. If Caleb Love repeats last season with UNC, next season with Michigan, does that change the perception of the conference for guards? I don't know if it does. But if he comes in, he clicks with Juwan Howard, and suddenly he looks a lot more like the player we thought he could be, certainly coming out of two seasons ago, coming out of high school, etc., yeah, that moves the needle.
Ben Kreike from Valpo, three straight All-Missouri Valley, first team last year. He's heading to Iowa, so they're reloading. Valpo had a coaching change up there. That was Matt Bowen. And, again, everybody's looking everywhere to get players in. And, right, you got to be a little bit more patiently impatient to sit around and hope that the guy that's 17 or 18 and weighs 180 pounds or whatever develops into that when you have these guys that are up and ready to go. Is it bad for business? Is it bad for the game? I don't know. When are we ever going to learn if it is or not? Is it hurting lower major programs? Probably. Yeah, you lose your best player. The guy's been on an all-league team 3 years in a row. Yeah, it probably doesn't help.
It's tough. On the other hand, you have probably more access to guys trickling down than you did before. Yeah. If it's easier
those
for a guy.
Those don't make the headlines, but it happens. That's what we forget.
And so suddenly those programs can stay a little older, you know, and suddenly you get like a SEMO, like a Southeast Missouri State, where it's like, whoa, they popped up in the what's it called? What are they in? The OVC, right? They won the OVC. You know, you get a setup in I'm trying to think of a good mid-major example, but there are some. I mean, like, you know, Kent State is a team that Indiana obviously played in the NCAA tournament. They have been good for the last several years under Rob Cinderhoff. You know, that team was a couple key transfers in there. A couple key pieces for them were transfers. What gets them over the hump from being, you know, the third best team in the MAC playing in the CIT to the NCAA tournament? Well, you know, it's one or two guys drifting down.
I'll just bring this. I have it in front of me. It's a loaded question in the sense. But you got a couple guys that left Penn State to go to William & Mary in Florida Gulf Coast. You had a kid leave Maryland to go to Ohio. A kid left Michigan to go to Tulsa. You had a kid leave Nebraska to go to Tennessee State. Now, you and I know this because we follow the trades, but that doesn't register with people. They don't see it that way. So it does go. It is a two-way street there. The other thing I've noticed this week in the realm of college basketball before we take our first break, games are leaking out. And Indiana, we already know, is heading to New York City. UConn, Texas, Louisville. Can we play anybody else but those three teams? Every time we leave Indiana, the state of, hey, we'll go to the Cherokee Center. Who are we playing down there? Well, Texas. Okay. Who did we just quit a home and home with a couple years ago? Louisville. And the last time we were in the Garden,
who
did we play? Well,
who are you going to – I mean,
Connecticut.
Who are you going to play? Are you going to play
I don't know.
Kansas? Well, you're playing them. Who are you going to play? You're going to play Arizona? Well, you're playing them.
Yep.
Until recently, you weren't going to put ACC teams on your non-conference schedule because you had the ACC Big Ten Challenge. So, I mean, I don't know. If you want to be at that level, you want to be in the Mauis, the Battle for Atlantis's, I can't remember what this is called. It used to
Bad
be the
Boy
2K
Mowers.
Sports. It used to be the 2K
the
Sports
Empire Classic.
The Empire Classic, thank you. The point is, you know,
there's only
you
want to
be in those
teams.
Events. Yeah. There's only a handful of teams that can be in those events. And those events will also look at it and say, well, we can't bring in, you know, another Big Ten team because Indiana's playing them. We don't want to bring in Kansas because, you know.
Well, that's an Adidas matchup.
Yeah, but you get my point.
Yes, I do.
Those events will also look around and say, well, there's a limited number of matchups we can put in this because there's only so many programs that ultimately move the needle. So
Kentucky,
I don't know.
Alabama.
I was yelling there. Forgive me.
Oh, well, that's fine. But that was Indiana's schedule leak, though. That's what happened. Ohio State's going to play West Virginia in Cleveland at the Cavs' place. Wisconsin's going to play Tennessee at the Kohl Center on the 10th of November. That's a game that got lost in the home and home lost in the pandemic. So these things start leaking out. We know the schedule's not coming out till when? September, that's usually when we do this, just so everybody's on the same page here.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So we will live with that. The transfer portal is the most interesting thing. Race Thompson's playing at the Portsmouth Invitational. Does that
mean
anything?
A couple of nice
anything?
Games. I mean, you know, the Portsmouth Invitational is kind of like for people that didn't get into the combine, didn't, you know, are trying to get from the back end of the field onto the draft radar. And it does actually seem like he's had I've heard he's had a couple good interviews down there. I think he had a couple good games. It's certainly at very least the sort of place where you can go get noticed, you know, to such a level that you can really assure yourself some positive leverage if you want to go overseas. You can maybe position yourself in a G League sort of situation.
It's
and
to
once
be
in a while,
seen outside of the normal confines where they've seen you the last 5, 6, 4 years,
yeah.
Right?
It's to be seen. It's basically
play out
a place
position.
That isn't the combine to be seen in a setting that is hugely NBA-driven.
Right. And you can redevelop who you are, reestablish who you are because you're not in that college. Hey, I got three guys in front of me that shoot it all the time. Okay, well, now you don't. So go out there and prove what you can and can't do.
Yeah.
And it's a great look for him. That's Zach Osterman. I'm Mike Glasgow. This is the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Brunch on the weekend, 11 to 3. Sit out on that patio today and enjoy it as the 83 degrees and sunshine is perfect this afternoon. It's going to rain all day tomorrow. Zach Osterman will tell us all about the Little Five weekend, how it works, what we're watching, what we're paying attention to, and all the great things that go along with the world's greatest college weekend. We will do that after we thank our friends at the Crazy Horse Tavern and do Diane Daly's news headlines. 83 in sunshine. Go enjoy it. Tomorrow, rain, half an inch as we get ready for the women's 35th edition of the Little 500. Temperatures maybe will climb into the mid-50s. Maybe we'll get into the mid-50s on Saturday, but at least the rain is gone. No food truck Friday tomorrow, by the way. Jordan and everybody pulled the plug on that earlier today. And 54 on Saturday, 53 on Sunday. Temperatures, you know, we pushed the record today, 83. The record is 86. it's going to be 32 on Sunday night. That's not the records we want to push either. Updated forecast, live radar, find it all at WGCLradio.com. A good 15 minutes of bicycle racing with our in-house expert, Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. Not only does he cover Indiana basketball and football, anything from the spring football game, I don't want to get too far away from that. Anything jump off the page?
No, I mean, again, it was really more just, I mean, it was a scrimmage. It was kind of an open scrimmage.
Yeah, which was great. Nice to see some football.
I think it was interesting for fans. I think it was, you know, it's always important to remember like what spring is for, and there might be guys you're not seeing because
they're keeping hurt, them out because they know what they can do.
Yeah, or there might be guys you're not seeing because like you know, like Tom Allen, for example, Christian Turner, the Wake Forest transfer running back. We saw some really interesting stuff with the running backs. This some two back looks. You know, I don't think I'm going too far to say some option stuff, you know, and that kind of thing. And it's important to remember, you know, Walt Bell reminds you, you can run the ball out of the air raid. Like that is, people do it. Plenty of people do it. We didn't see a lot of Christian Turner in spring. And it was because he had a minor injury. And the way Tom Allen talked about it, he, you know, if this was the season, he probably would have been playing. But it's not. It's the spring season. He played 4 years, two at Michigan, two at Wake Forest. They know what he can do. They'll get him in the summer. They'll get him right for fall camp. No, I think it was I am interested in, number one, that run game. Obviously, the offensive line goes without saying. The quarterback goes without saying. I also wonder if this is a group that can have a bit more of a pass rush.
Andre Carter seemed to fill that.
Linnell Carr a little bit.
Texas Tech.
Maybe having some bigger bodies in the interior that will allow you to get a little more creative with some of the blitzing and things like that. Jacob Mangum, Farrar, and Caden Turner, transfer, rising, second-year player. I think he's a redshirt freshman, but second-year player, both at linebacker. Maybe they can give you a little bit more. I'm curious.
Is Turner 14? That has been,
Turner is 14, okay. Yes. And Mangum, Farrar is, I think, 7. And it's, I mean,
why is a quarterback playing linebacker? Wait, a blue jersey on. What are we doing?
It's just kind of, you know, this team doesn't need one guy to get 15, but that defense is built to succeed by creating havoc plays. And that starts by getting penetration and pass rush. You don't have to get sacks always. Sacks are important.
You just have to make the quarterback uncomfortable.
But yeah, you need to get offenses off schedule and then make the quarterback, as you said, uncomfortable.
Make him uncomfortable. Why? Because then he makes bad decisions, and bad decisions then can be capitalized upon. Mm-hmm. The decision being made tomorrow for the women's Little 500 will be the 35th running. The forecast is better. Yesterday, we thought we were going to get an inch of rain during the day. On Friday, that's now half an inch. And we go to our local bike expert, Zach Osterman, who has ridden in the race, coached the race, and everything else. How much water can that track handle before we start rolling our eyes a little bit?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about a half an inch unless it all came very quickly. Yeah. I mean, you know, the one time I've seen the race shut down was 2010, and that was, I mean, a genuine sort of thunderstorm rolled in and just left standing water on the track. Now, the consistency of that thing has changed over time. I think some rain would do it some good. The problem is, you know, too much rain gets to be a problem. Also, some rain plus temperatures on race day. Like, the ideal is probably, like, on the Thursday, it's cold, it's rainy, the track gets wet, we can pack it down, and then we're riding on a good, smooth surface on Friday and Saturday. Unfortunately, it seems like we're probably going to be more in the sort of like, well, we're going to have to ride through it on Friday and Saturday.
That's what it sounds like. So you're going to get wet. Temperatures here, it says a high of 58. Rain early, remaining cloudy with showers in the afternoon, rainfall around an inch. Saturday, we'll get precipitation out of the forecast for the 72nd running of the men's race, 2 o'clock. Winds, though, 10 to 20 miles an hour out of the west. And people forget that track runs west-east, right? Because the sun sets behind that goal, and then it runs east the other direction. So that is a brutal headwind if that is the case. What is the ultimate temperature to ride for a rider? I don't care about the people in the stands at the,
I guess this is probably just my preference more than anything else. High 60s to mid 70s.
No humidity.
Yeah, and just a little cloud cover.
So like, you're not baking in the sun.
Yeah, but minimal wind. Like that would be, you want it high enough that it's not hard to warm up and stay warm. You know, part of the problem with cold is it saps your strength, it tightens your muscles, it's hard to stay warmed up. It's hard to, you know, especially in an event like that where you're going, you know, you're putting in hard efforts and then you're getting off the bike for a little bit. And then you need to crank the engine back up again. Most bike races are just like we start here and we end there.
Right.
And so the engine is running constantly. Obviously, you can rev it a little stronger at times, but the engine is running constantly from start to finish. I think that you know, always one of the challenges about training for Little Five has been the interval nature of it. And it's even harder when it's cold. So you want it warmer when you want it warm enough that it's not hard to stay warm. You don't want it so warm you start worrying about dehydration and things like that. And so
it's different for riders than it is for fans. If you're a fan, you don't want to sit out there in 85 degree weather either. That's not going to be the case. So temperatures in the mid-50s, and you're going to run it. The women's race, the 35th edition, they'll have the team that won the first race back to be the grand marshals for both races. The other good news is if you are going to the race and buying tickets, one ticket gets you into two races, so that's fun. The pomp and circumstance that goes with it is really cool. And if you haven't had a chance to go, I'd suggest it. Maybe not this year. Maybe this isn't your perfect Goldilocks weather forecast, but – the bike race and the party are two separate things. Tell me about that.
Well, I didn't do the party so much in college because
that's the point. Because you're riding,
yeah. I mean,
but when you go to the event at the track, there's not kegs and there's not like
no. It's a sporting event. It's a spectacle, and I think it's a really cool one. I've always argued this. It is. As much as anything can be unique, you know, we're taught in riding classes, unique means one of a kind. Don't say something is very unique or pretty unique. You know, something has to be literally the only thing like it in the world to be unique.
This is it.
If it's not there, it's close. You know, the scope of it, the history of it, the nature of it, it's an amateur event. Like, it's not something, there's nothing.
It was close there for a minute there, wasn't it? Didn't we kind of tread into the...
Well, we've treaded through a lot of different things. I mean, it's almost been canceled a few times, and we can go back through the whole history.
Where did you get that guy to ride from?
In the 70s, the Stetna brothers with Delta Chi, there were fewer rules about sort of like... you know, amateur, whatever, this and that. And to be fair, I think back then there were also just sort of fewer structures and regulations around like USA Cycling and like what made you a pro versus how you could grade that and basically sort of, you know, classify people. But the point is there's nothing behind it. There's no TV contract that holds it up. You know, there's no like something I've always said when I've talked to people about like NIL and they're like, I'm unsure about this. I say, yeah, I get it. You know, but what I'd say is that as long as 7 million people tune into Ohio State, Penn State on a Saturday night, like, we'll still have college football. Little Five doesn't have that. Like, it is word of mouth
by the people
in a
the
lot
people.
Of ways. Like, at least colloquially. I don't mean, like, literally word
well,
of mouth.
But,
like,
to your point.
It exists at the will of the people that want to do it.
Correct.
And not much else.
And the point,
and for it to be this long-standing is impressive.
It is impressive because it has nothing to do with Indiana University athletics. That's the other impressive part of this.
Yeah.
It is a completely student-run, with help from the foundation, student-run organization. None of that money you just mentioned from the Penn State, Ohio State 7 o'clock Saturday night broadcast goes to this event. It runs on its own, true or false?
Well, all the money goes back into scholarships for what they call working students, which I think, you know, most students. But I think I got like $500 once, so it was nice.
There you go.
I think I spent it on bike parts.
And the track is ready. The track is a quarter mile, so the men will do what, 200 laps? The women will do 100 laps?
Yeah.
Why those numbers? Just because the
race?
I've
always believed the men's race is 50 miles. So it's a nice round number, 200 laps.
Same, the Indy 500 is 200 laps.
Yeah.
Didn't they kind of steal this idea from there?
Yes, very
in
much
general?
So. Howard Wilcox, Howdy Wilcox, his father was an IndyCar racer, what we now call IndyCar stock car racer. I believe he won the 500. He died racing his car, I think, in Pennsylvania. But the point is, Howdy Wilcox sort of conceived of the Little 500 with the Indianapolis 500 as kind of a guide.
1919, Howard Wilcox.
There you go. I've always, you know, I have had people argue to me before. I've had women in the women's field and female alumni argue the women's race should be more like 150. 100 is very fast. It just happens.
So it's more of a sprint race?
Yes, very much so. And you know, it's a lot harder to recover if you lose ground in the women's race. Just
so there's no attrition, right?
There's no – I don't want to say this because I've never ridden in the women's race, obviously. But speaking to all of the many, many women that I know who have ridden in the women's race, it does not have, you know, from first 30 laps of the men's race, everybody's blood's up, adrenaline's flowing, everybody's excited, very fast, very aggressive, you know, very, very sort of front foot. Last 30 laps, last 25 to 30 laps, everybody's trying to position. Everybody's, you know, they've gotten that far. Now they're jockeying to figure out this is how we get into position to do what we want to do to try to win the race, all that. The 140 in between are a marathon. Like, they are a real war of attrition, as you said. The women's race doesn't get that way quite so much. You know, if you have a women's team, you have to throw at least 5 exchanges in the women's race, 10 in the men's race. If you've got a women's team, let's say you got 2 strong riders, 2 good but not as strong riders, you know, if your strong riders each handle 2 15-lap sets, the other 2 riders may get 2 10-lap sets, and that's it. You know, and so it's like, I mean, you get all your exchanges in, and obviously strategy will dictate that it'll be a little more nuanced than that, but my point is you may only ride once or twice in a day in the women's race.
Yeah.
You train all year, you may only be on the bike once or twice. It's just a different animal. It is a lot faster. Frankly, I've always found it more exciting in a way for that reason. There's a lot more capacity in the women's race for something to kind of happen out of nowhere where you look up and you say, wait a minute, how did they get 3/4 of a lap up on the field? How did that happen? It can happen a lot faster.
Gotcha.
And so it can be more entertaining in some ways. But I think that's, you know, what I've also always enjoyed is – and so maybe this is an argument for keeping it at 100 laps, is the dynamics are different between the two races. You're watching a different kind of bike race between the two in many senses. Same track, same bikes, same parameters, et cetera. But because of the differences in lengths, probably even to some extent the differences in days, the women's race is usually, not always, but usually reliably warmer than the men's race because it's Friday afternoon. It's, you know, we're deeper into the day. And that's
the warmest
part
of the day for sure.
And so, you know, it you just get different bike races, and they're both fun, and I've been going for 17 years, and I'm not going to stop. So
we have just a couple minutes left. Who wins? Why? I don't need the team. How do you win? Why will they win? Who's holding the trophy? Women or men or both? This weekend. Not going to get into your race strategy on that.
No, I'm not.
All right.
I'm going to leave. Cutters. I know they're recording. I know Cutters are recording every single audio channel in and out of Bloomington right now, looking for every. I'll leave them guessing.
That's the Cutter? No, Cutters. That's it's
different. It'll be, I think, you know.
How many, okay, let me do this.
I know more about the men's side than the women's.
How many teams in the men's race?
I think there's a, you know, if I'm sitting here right now, the ones I would mention first would be Cutters, SIGEP, us, Phi Kappa Psi. I help coach Phi Kappa Psi. Jet Black, Delts, kind of the same thing now, I think. I think they may be back to being Delts. I'm not really sure where that stands. You've got teams like Phi Delt, which I think won last year, has undergone a lot of attrition and turnover. Some guys graduated, but you still expect their process to get them there. SAE may be a little bit the same thing. Some teams like Alpha Kappa Psi that have looked really interesting and had strong springs. Grey Goat, another team where you just kind of trust their process. So I think that, you know, if the winner is not from that group, I'd be a little bit surprised. On the women's side, I think Alpha Chi Omega really has backed up. They're on the pole, unless I'm sorely mistaken. I think they have backed up taking the pole with a strong spring. You always trust Cap Alpha Theta, but they're young this year. Melanzana are the defending champions. Delta Gamma won 2 years ago, and I expect him to be, as we say in soccer, there or thereabouts again. So, I mean, it's, you know.
How much does the rain play a factor, if any?
It'll make the track a little messier. It'll be a different kind of messy than what we've seen in the last few years when the track has gotten dry and loose. Instead, what it'll do is it'll slow it down. It'll make it a little bit slicker. It may mean a slightly faster race, but it may mean a slightly more hectic, more dangerous race.
It's not like a horse race where it comes up in your face, is it?
The other thing I would say about it is.
Does it come up that much?
Okay. It gets all over your face. I just put my hand in front of the microphone.
You did?
That's
I saw
good,
that.
It's good radio.
Well, you can tell that's what it does.
The other thing I would say about the rain is there is no escaping it out there on the track. There's no way to get dry. There's no, like, get in the dugout and warm up. There's no go down the tunnel and throw a few passes.
Put the big coat on?
Yeah, I mean, you can wear a coat in the pit. That's about the best you can do. You can't even have umbrellas in the pit. So if it is raining for either or both races.
No, on the men's. The men's will be fine.
It's going to be very it's going to be the kind of cold that over time is going to get into people's muscles a little bit.
Now, let me ask you one last thing about the weather. I know you're not a weather person. How much of a window do we need to ride 25 miles? 90 minutes?
Yeah.
2 hours? So there is a – it's not –
they'll ride in the rain. They need severe weather.
My point is it's not going to – it might not just rain all the time. So there might be a window. It might rain to 358.
Sure. Yeah, the women's race usually goes about 75 to 90 minutes. The men's race usually goes about 210 to 230. It just depends.
Depends on
that. Those are wide. Those are wide ranges. But
gotcha. So it doesn't have to be. It can rain all morning, but that won't matter if it's 4 o'clock. We'll tell you who wins right here on the airwaves tomorrow. Big show Friday. Great job as always. Good luck to your team on Saturday. We'll get a full report next week. Tomorrow, big show Friday. Joe Smith is with us. We will have Scott Dolson with us. We will have Ken Bykoff and Dan Hilker from the Foul Course as well. Join us tomorrow. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour on a Thursday is over.